From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. So we want to pause for a minute to let you know that Boise State Public Radio celebrated Giving Tuesday by asking you, our listeners, to nominate your favorite local nonprofit. 217 organizations were nominated, and the lucky winners for 2022 are the Idaho Food Bank in Boise and Idaho Legal Aid Services, also from Boise. For more information, just check out BoiseStatePublicRadio.org, and we want to thank all of you for making Giving Tuesday such a success. Okay, let's switch gears now to one of those topics that, frankly, so many people don't like to talk about, but we should be talking about. That's because millions of Americans have issues like urinary incontinence or an overactive bladder. And November has been dubbed Bladder Health Month to try to get more people to talk about these common problems and then to find resources to fix them. Dr. Jennifer Grunenfelder is a urologist with St. Luke's in Boise and Meridian, who also specializes in female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery. And she's joining us now to share more. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gemma. I really appreciate you having me.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about how folks don't like to talk about this subject. I'm going to guess that your patients are maybe a bit reluctant to discuss their bladder health.
That's true. Although I think by the time they get to me as a urologist, as a general rule, they've brought it up either to their regular primary care physician or to their gynecologist as a subject of some concern. But even so, you're right. They're always quite embarrassed to bring up the conversation.
So just how common is this? Are these issues?
Extremely common. It is a disease of aging, although I always tell women that even though that's true, that doesn't mean there aren't lots of really good treatments for it. But probably anywhere from 1 in 6 to 1 in 3 women, depending on whose studies you believe, will have this problem over the course of her life. And it becomes far more common as you get older to have some kind of a bladder complaint.
And I would think with women, and please, you're the doctor, not me, so correct me if I'm wrong, that with a lot of women, it, you know, these issues can start even after childbirth. I mean, I have numerous girlfriends who joke about like, oh, you know, can't run too fast, can't jump on a trampoline, right? So I would assume then as we age, those issues could get more problematic.
Right. It's very common that it starts with childbirth, although most women who give birth are relatively young, relatively healthy, and so oftentimes they'll have some difficulties with leakage immediately after the birth, and then they tend to do okay for a long time, but it's pretty common that I will see women in the office 15 to 20 years after their first vaginal birth, and that's when that small amount of leakage often gets severe enough that they decide that they need to see a doctor. It's also common. There are really two different kinds of leakage. There's that leaking with coughing, jumping, sneezing that you just referred to. And then there's also urge incontinence or overactive bladder, which is more when I have the urge to go, I can't make it to the toilet in time. And I think we've seen a lot of ads over the last decade where there have been medications for this problem. The sort of gotta go ad was famous, or there's one where a bladder is leading a woman around. And that kind of leakage happens even later in life and does not have much to do with childbirth and seems to be just kind of more related to how the bladder ages and the kinds of problems that it creates.
So I would assume, too, that not all of these bladder issues are exclusively female problems.
Absolutely true. We definitely see leakage in men. Again, it tends to happen later in life because obviously they are not going through childbirth. And in men, it oftentimes can be related to having an enlarged prostate, although there are other kinds of leakage as well. And it gets more common in men so that by their 70s and 80s, it's almost as common in men as it is in women. Women just start a little bit earlier with the leakage, I would say.
So what are some of the warning signs that people should be watching out for that would indicate maybe they have an issue?
Well, I think if they're bothered by the leakage, then they have an issue. One of the things that we think about as urologists is where does it have an impact in a patient's life? So If you're leaking a little bit, but you don't mind wearing a panty liner and you're fine about it, then you don't necessarily need to see a doctor. But when you're starting to say no to any social activities or be so embarrassed about it that you're restricting what you do, that is a good time to see a doctor.
So can we talk about some tips to help folks with their overall bladder health? Because I read that one thing people can do, which seems completely counterintuitive, is to drink more water.
I'm right there with you. It's counterintuitive. There's not a lot of evidence that it actually helps overactive bladder or stress incontinence. If you are a patient who forms kidney stones, then drinking a lot of water will help. There are women who have painful bladder syndrome where they are very sensitive to dietary triggers such as citrus, tomato, acid, caffeine, alcohol that make them feel like they have to pee all the time. And for that small population, drinking a lot of water seems to help because it dilutes out the acidity of the urine. But for women who are having problems with leakage, fluid restriction is actually part of what we do. And part of conservative therapy is to say, maybe pull back on the fluids. If you're drinking 8 to 10 glasses a day, you probably could dial it down unless you're somebody who's working outside or has a history of dehydration or a history of kidney stones.
Okay. So then things like not smoking will help, correct?
Not smoking. That's just a piece of advice I can give to every patient every time, right? And never be wrong. Yeah. Smoking significantly increases your risk of bladder cancer as well. So absolutely quit smoking. It will have an effect on the bladder. Another effect is that we're seeing that obesity really contributes to unhealthy bladders. If you have a population of women who are, say, so obese that they decide to undergo a gastric bypass, more than half of them will report that their incontinence completely goes away when they get to a normal weight. So you had all mentioned, the other advice about things that lead to good health are true for bladder as well. Quit smoking, lose weight, exercise regularly are all good pieces of advice.
So you had mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, medications. You said, you know, there are commercials and all of that out there. So do certain medications help?
They do. In the way of conservative therapy, I would also want to push that physical therapy is really helpful and Kegel exercises are really helpful. And we often start with that before moving on to medications. But yes, the medications are within the American Urological Association guidelines for how we treat overactive bladder, and they can be quite effective.
So then let's discuss surgeries and if those could be helpful and maybe who that's never happened on the air before. Who would be looking at surgery?
Once again, it's the patient's choice. So many times patients will say, do I need surgery? And it's very different when we're dealing with incontinence compared to, say, you come into the ER with appendicitis or you have a cancer diagnosis. So I would tell any patient where the leakage is bothering them enough that they are limiting their daily activities or the factor of embarrassment is keeping them from doing what they want to do. Those are the patients who would benefit from surgery. And there have been so many innovations in surgery over the last probably 15 years. For stress incontinence, we do sling procedures, which is basically where you're recreating scaffolding in the pelvic floor to kind of hold everything up and hold everything in place. And sling procedures got a very bad name for a while. You may have seen billboards about vaginal mesh, but the FDA did a lot of work really to look at those and improve those. And I think we're well on the other side of that. There are some new office procedures that are really helpful, where you can essentially bulk up the urethra so that you can help it stay closed. And that's something that has really changed how we look at it in the last few years, because it's something that we can do something quickly in the office that significantly improves people's quality of life. Those two procedures are for stress incontinence, which is that leakage with coughing, sneezing, jumping, the trampoline. And then there are also some new procedures for patients who have urge incontinence, which was traditionally treated with pills. Sometimes patients will say that the pills don't work so well for them or they don't like the side effects. And Botox has actually been FDA approved for putting in the bladder and treating the problem. And then there's also a pacemaker procedure called sacral neuromodulation, where you implant a little device that stimulates to the nerve to the bladder to give it kind of a low-level electrical signal saying, hold on, relax, wait until she gets to the toilet. And those pacemakers are great, and they last 10 to 15 years. It's a quick office procedure to see if it will work, and then a short outpatient procedure that doesn't really require general anesthesia. It's more like the kind of light sedation you would have for, say, a colonoscopy. And those work tremendously well, and a lot of patients love those because you don't have all of the side effects of medication.
Yeah.
So sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I'm running out of time, but I so appreciate this conversation with you. It's an uncomfortable conversation, I think, for a lot of folks to have, but such good information if people are dealing with these issues. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I really appreciate being on the show. Bladder Matters for Idaho Matters.
It really does. We've been talking with Dr. Jennifer Gruenfelder, a urologist with St. Luke's, about Bladder Health Month. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.